Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, A Touch of Disney is announced. We have most of the details. New tram route decorations for the 65th anniversary.
Legacy pass holders have some more new perks. Permits filed for changes coming to the Jungle Cruise. We talk with former cast member Dave and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of March 3rd, 2021. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank all of our current weekly tiers for supporting the show. Without your support, DL Weekly would not be possible. Your support ensures the podcast will continue and that we can make it to the parks more often to bring you the latest and greatest news and information from the parks. If you would like to become an official weekly tier, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Now, we're going to start talking here in the news about A Touch of Disney, but if you are interested in that and you want to plan your next Disney vacation, maybe even to Walt Disney World because they are open, The people over at Concierge are there as well. James, Mike, and the rest of the team will listen to what you want to make out of your trip to the happiest place on earth and work to make all your dreams come true. Best of all, there's no additional cost to you. They can even help you explore outside the parks at Disney resorts, cruises, or other great adventures. All trips, big or small, could benefit from working with Concierge. So head on over to concierge.com and tell them the DL Weekly sent you.
Well, our friends over at All Enchanteeners have announced their Ear of the Month Club theme for March. Drum roll, please. This month's theme is Disney foods, which is perfect since we are all excited about the Taste of Disney event coming later this month. They have also started making Numemo ears for your Numemo friends. Of course, there's Mickey, Minnie, Donald. We just introduced Kermit, Miss Piggy. So many options. Stitch, that's the other one
there's
I forgot. Tons. But yes, they have little ears for your new emos. They also have masks to keep them safe. Anyways, head on over to allenchantingears.com. Make sure you use coupon code DLWeekly10 for 10% off your order.
Now let's get to the news. Just after posting our episode last week, because apparently somebody at Disney likes to listen to our podcast and likes to just mess with us, Disney announced the dates for their food event, A Touch of Disney. This experience will cost $75 per person and will include a food gift card for $25, entrance to most of Disney California Adventure, and free parking in Mickey and Friends. Now, when we say most of Disney California Adventure, no attractions will be open, just to
yes,
be clear.
Yep.
A Touch of Disney will begin on March 18th with tickets going on sale on March 4th. The event will take place Thursdays through Mondays from noon until 8 p.m. Tickets continue to be released on a rolling basis until the experience ends. Tickets must be purchased in advance on Disneyland.com for a specific date.
So exciting. The other cool thing that's happening with this is some of our favorite characters are going to be at this event. And they keep hinting that there's some sounds. So I feel like there's going to be some shape or form of entertainment, whether it's maybe new music that they're playing and pumping through, or if they're actually going to have any sort of live socially distanced performances. I don't know, but I have seen some hints to listening and like pay attention for sounds. Anyways, very, very excited. The other thing too that your ticket includes is PhotoPass, unlimited PhotoPass download. So you can go hang out with your characters, socially distanced, of course, and get some photos. There's going to be different photo stations, it sounded like, too. So like photo op type places. Anyways, this is as close as we're going to get for a little while, at least, to being in a Disney park. And I don't know about you, but just this opportunity made me so excited. And I feel like it's almost like planning a normal Disney vacation, talking about this event.
All I know is by the time you listen to this, I would say some of you will listen to this before tickets go on sale. We have no details on a time they go on sale or anything. If you're listening to this after they go on sale, you already know whatever time it was. Hopefully the ticket process is not too terribly difficult. I know we are going to attempt to get some tickets and we'll see what happens, but we don't really know anything about it. Tickets are limited, like we said, to... or we didn't say. Tickets are limited to 8 per group once you get into the ticket buying process. So,
and it's at 8 per person or group per day. So if you want to buy tickets for multiple days, it did sound that you might be able to do that in a single transaction.
I hope that doesn't mean that people... I mean, I guess they're non-resellable or whatever, mm-hmm. so they should be. Well, anyway, I think this sounds really cool. There's been a lot of controversy online about the fact that... because they said that it includes parking, which I think is $25. So, but people have been frustrated by the fact that it says that it includes the price of parking, but some people may not be parking. So there's just like a whole... ordeal with that. Personally, I still think it's a great deal. I honestly thought it was going to be more than this, maybe, I thought. And then they keep adding stuff. So like you said, Teresa, they're going to have some characters and some auditory things. You get a $25 gift card for food. I mean, I felt like they could have charged $75 just to get in and people still would have paid for it. So, you know.
Well, where there is food, there is a Disney Parks blog foodie guide. So much food will be available. So much at A Taste of Disney, including... many resort favorites. Some of our highlights, of course, include Dole Whips, Fluffernutter Churros, Corn Dogs, Lobster Nachos, Beef Skewers from Bengal Barbecue, and a whole lot more. I think Monte Cristo's on there, Walt's Chili. Plus, there was a bunch of new things, too. There are many options. It's going to be impossible to not find something that you want to eat, and we'll probably want to attend a few days just so you can eat it all.
Yeah, that's probably why they're doing multiple days allowed, because of the fact that there's so much food on here. So for those of you watching on the stream, I'm just going to scroll through this quick. And there is just a ton of stuff. Like, I didn't want to count, but I would swear there's probably close to 100 different things on this thing. The other thing I'm really curious about, and I feel like I'm going to get weirdly obsessive about, is they're selling these like coins.
I got so excited about the coins too. So at the
Lamplight, where did you see that they were selling at other places? Like that, there was
I got
a collection.
Excited.
Okay,
and then I reread it, and it said a collection of like collectible merch.
Oh,
or collectible items, including the coins. I thought there was 15 coins to collect, and I was like, oh my gosh. And then I,
okay, now I feel better because I thought I was going to have to get like a whole collection.
No. It's just, from what I can tell, the only collectible coin that's been announced is the one for Lamplight Lounge. And it looks gorgeous because it reminds me of the like inlay that they have in the floor, like as you enter. It's beautiful. But they've got all these really cute, there's also these like little grape, little green and little red grape. Like drink, like clips, so like you clip it at the bottom of your wine glass. So many different drinks. I just, looking at this menu overwhelms me. It's like,
this literally is everything they have at the resort, it seems like.
And more, because there's a ton of stuff that's new, like stuff that's not normally available.
They are going to have Bengal barbecue skewers, and I was more than excited hearing that. So I'm very excited. I don't know how people are going to be able to eat all of the food that they're offering here. It is a crazy amount of food.
You're going to have to go multiple days. You're just going to have to go a couple of times.
And we were laughing. Because we thought that the Boysenberry Festival at Knott's looked like it had a lot of food. This has like a comparable amount of food, I feel.
I feel like the Knott's one seems more overwhelming because of like the graphic they used.
Oh, yeah, because it's like, just like a giant list of stuff.
It's a giant list of stuff, whereas this didn't feel as overwhelming because it was broken up with pictures, and also the fact that we know what a lot of this stuff is versus looking at through the Knott's offerings. Everything on that list was new to me. So, yeah, I don't know. So much food, so little time.
Yeah. If attractions are open, I don't even think you'd have time. It's only 8 hours per day.
So this is how I've been like thinking about this event. So I attended, as we all know, the Oogie Boogie Bash back in 2019. And yes, attractions were open during the Oogie Boogie Bash.
Just to be clear, they are not open for this.
Correct. I didn't feel like... That just was not a priority for me at all. Like, just being in the event and like doing all the event specific activities.
I'm so jealous you guys
was
go to that.
So much fun. So I feel like yes, it's sad that of course we would love to be able to go on things like Radiator Springs Racers or Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout, whatever. But, you know, yes, we'd love to go on some of these things, but I don't know how much we're going to miss them because I feel like there's just going to be a lot of other stuff going on. Plus, just the fact that we get to be in a Disney park.
Isn't it going to be weird to be able to walk by all these attractions and they're just, like, not operating?
Maybe. I don't know.
Because usually they're open is the point.
Yeah, I don't know. But the other thing, too, that I realized, right, so this goes until 8 p.m.
Yeah.
This you get to be in a Disney park after dark.
I'm excited. Disneyland's still better after dark for me. But
you get the fun wheel. Open. And they'll probably, hopefully, maybe do a little something with the fountains.
Maybe.
In World of Color Lagoon. They did that not for... like full show, obviously. And then, yes, Cars Land is just
Cars Land's beautiful at night.
Just absolutely gorgeous.
Do you think that that they'll have an Oogie Boogie Bash this year?
This year? Probably not this year.
Dang.
I'm so jealous. Maybe. Because now that I'm thinking about it, they would be able to socially it'd have to be reduced capacity depending on the state of everything.
Yeah.
You could socially distant the treat lines. Disney cast members already were the ones handing out the treats.
Sure.
You weren't allowed to grab into the thing itself. And actually, the meet and greets, they were for the characters.
You kind of like walked by them, right?
Wasn't that kind of like some of the characters you walked by, there were other ones that you could like stand next to. But like the big characters were actually already socially distant meet and greet things that you just kind of like walked past.
Gotcha.
And they were actually in the middle. They were kind of like the entertainment for some of the queues. You could try and figure out how to do like a socially distant thing to walk through the lights show on the Redwood Creek Challenge Trail.
I don't remember what it was called either, but I know what you're talking about.
You could, like,
I'm only saying this because I want to go to
And I guess you could also, like, make people keep separated out for the World of Color show that they did. And you could also space people out on the along the parade route. Hmm. It would be a lot of, like, work on Disney's part to be able to, like, get all of these little sections sectioned off, but... I mean, who knows? I feel like by then we're all going to be so excited and desperate to do something like this that I will stay in my own little box. That's fine. And personally, I like having my space going to these things. It was amazing going and seeing the Halloween version of World of Color for the Oogie Boogie Bash.
Sure.
And not having a full amphitheater that was like shoulder to shoulder cram packed full of people. We actually had better viewing for that showing than when we had our reserve seating for Carthay Circle.
Yeah.
We were closer and like the view was less obstructed.
Because we had a pretty decent view then. Yeah. So that's really good.
So many less people.
Sure.
So it made a huge difference. So
I'm just selfish because I want to go to one of these. But anyway, with the upcoming use of the Mickey and Friends parking structure to be utilized for A Touch of Disney, the tram route to Downtown Disney has been refreshed with some 65th anniversary banners and decorations. The tram route will open to guests for walking to Downtown Disney, as there will not be any tram service at this time.
I thought it was fun that they're doing this. You know, not something that they have to really plan ahead in theme, but I do think it's obviously they probably have these banners already made up for the 65th celebration. So why not get them out and let people see and enjoy them?
So the real question is, when the parks do reopen, are they going to celebrate their 65th anniversary for that?
I don't think so. I feel like
they had a bunch of stuff planned.
Yeah.
And it was close enough to July that they probably had stuff like ready, but then they weren't able to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they will. I feel like, unfortunately, the 65th is going to get kind of skipped over as far as celebrations go.
I mean, the big one's 75, probably. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Exactly. With the continued closures of the parks beyond A Touch of Disney, the local politicians are trying to help accelerate the limited reopenings as completely operating theme parks at a reduced capacity at a lower tier of the COVID-19 blueprint for a safer economy. LA County voted in favor of AB 420, which would allow theme parks to reopen at 25% capacity in Tier 3 instead of Tier 4.
I feel like this is just like a no-brainer because it's like, of course, L.A. County and down, you know, by Orange County and stuff, they're going to be in favor of this because they're trying to get businesses and stuff reopened.
Yeah.
And Disneyland and other theme parks like Universal, Knott's Berry Farm, like we mentioned earlier, you know, is really the anchors of these economies. So, of course, they're going to vote to try to like get these things open because they want to try to revive that. Because so many things, you know, it's a domino effect. You can't say like, yeah, sure, the hotels can open, but then there's like, maybe they can, but there's nothing that anybody's going to want to book a hotel room for necessarily. Well, I'll touch a Disney, I guess.
So yeah, the other thing with this too, just to kind of remind everyone, previous or currently, larger theme parks like Disneyland weren't able to open until tier four, which was the yellow tier, which was basically everything was pretty much back to normal. Yeah. However, smaller theme parks were going to be allowed to be open in tier three, which is the orange tier. So this is just trying to get all theme parks in tier three slash the orange tier, however you want to say it.
Legacy pass holders like Teresa continue to have added perks to their now defunct passes. This time, there will be some exclusive perks and extras during the A Touch of Disney event. There will be a special photo op to celebrate DCA's 20th anniversary, plus access to themed amenities at the Legacy Pass Holder Corner in Paradise Gardens. A special button will be available, as well as a Legacy Pass Holder magnet.
This is so embarrassing, but I feel like I'm in a safe space. When I saw this announced, I freaked out. I was so excited that they actually have the, I really like the purple logo for Legacy Pass Holders, mostly because it's purple.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have now like immortalized it on a magnet, and there's something so addicting and exciting about AP magnets. I don't know
there's
what
like
it is.
There's like a whole following.
They're just so fun. I don't know why. They're just so fun. I have all of mine on my refrigerator. Anyways, so yeah, there's just
get
something
two,
so exciting.
Because I need to get one.
I know. There's just something. We got to figure that out. There's something just so exciting to me about AP magnets. I don't know what it is. And of course, everyone knows how much I love Disney buttons. I don't know why, but I have a weird thing
we don't
about
even know
Disney
what the button
buttons
looks like.
As well. I don't care what it looks like. I want it.
And that is the point of the story.
Yeah, so anyways, I'm very excited about this experience just to see. Yeah, you know, it's just something a little extra. They did something obviously a little extra similar because Oogie Boogie Bash, you had your own separate treat trail and you got a magnet. So
there you go.
Well, as we told you a few episodes ago, the world-famous Jungle Cruise is set to get a modern update to make the attraction more culturally sensitive. Permits were filed to begin work on transforming the areas to be updated. Scrims will be installed around the areas to be worked on, allowing the attraction to stay running for guests. The construction is scheduled to be completed by the end of 2021. This is so interesting that they're putting, like, they're worried about putting up scrims because right.
That's who's what gonna, the that's what know. The permit is for, is for installation of scrims, which is hilarious. But I'm telling you, I honestly believe we haven't said this in the podcast yet, but I've been saying it on previous weeks and I've said it in the chat a few times. I think May or June we're going to see openings.
I do. I feel like it's going to be soon. So it does sound like it's a pretty big rehaul, right? We talked about it a few weeks ago. So it is very possible.
And they need capacity. They can't, like, shut down the Jungle Cruise.
Well, and it's an outdoor attraction. Yep. So, you know, even if they're able to open with maybe outdoor attractions and not indoor attractions for some reason, you know, if they have restrictions when they do open, you don't want to have the Jungle Cruise not operating because that's one of your few totally outdoor attractions. So it makes sense. And I do think that this is going to not be a quick overnight install. This is going to take weeks, if not months, to do.
But by this time next year, we'll have a new Jungle Cruise.
So
I'm excited. Guests, have you talked to producer Vern about this? What does he think about this?
I don't think I have.
Oh. Guests with reservations at Carthay Circle can now use mobile check-in to notify a host that you're ready for your reservation without having to stand in line to speak to a host. Reservations can also be made through the mobile system if you can snag one.
This, you know, I think this was so cool that you can do the mobile check-in. And obviously, I do think that they're going to utilize this, too, for Lamplight Lounge. It just makes sense. The other cool thing, too, though, is that you can, instead of going up and talking to a hostess to see if maybe they still had openings, that you can, you know, just check via your phone as well. Since the opening of the Star Wars Trading Post, waits to access a location have exceeded 4 hours at times, resulting in long waits just to get into Downtown Disney. There is a virtual wait list, but you have to be inside of Downtown Disney to get in line. So that leaves guests wandering around for up to 4 hours, keeping the shopping area busy. This could be improved by allowing guests to register for the queue before they arrive at the resort.
So we actually, Kate, one of our community managers, said that she experienced this week, that she had quite a wait. And even when they got called back, it was still like another hour of waiting in the come back line. to get into this shop. Yeah. So they've got to do something. I think it's just going to get worse, too, because when this Touch of Disney thing happens, mm-hmm. they're closing Buena Vista Street back down. So that's going to be that much less capacity in the downtown Disney district.
You know, it'll be interesting. I almost wonder if logistically it would make it won't make sense because you have people parking in the parking garage. But I was always my thought process was going with would it make more sense that if you had tickets to a Touch of Disney, you are supposed to go like use the harbor entrance and then just go right into the park versus because I'm trying to figure out how are they going to say, oh, OK, you count towards the capacity for Touch of Disney. You count towards the capacity for Downtown Disney, like trying to figure out two capacities separately. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a logistical.
Well, here's a question for you about this. So they're going to people are going to be walking from Mickey and Friends. Where are the security tents going to be?
I don't know,
because right now you would pass security to get on the tram. But I don't know if they're going to funnel people that way.
Yeah.
For this.
It'll be interesting to see.
Or are they going to set it up maybe somewhere along the tram route? Or are they going to block off? Like maybe they're going to close Harbor entrance for Downtown Disney and they're going to block off. So people come off the tram route and go right over to the parks. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm
sure
a lot
Disney
of different things.
Has this planned, and I'm sure they have a perfect solution that we haven't even considered yet.
Yeah, but the thing that's just crazy to me is just the domino effect of the popularity of the Star Wars Trading Post, right? So not only do you have, like we were saying, crazy long waits, 4 hours, but now the people that are waiting those 4 hours are just meandering around Downtown Disney for that 4 hours, which then also backs up the line just to get in Downtown Disney because you have too many people, like the capacity's too high. So when you have people that are just standing and waiting in line outside of security just to get into Downtown Disney.
Yeah.
Plus, I've heard that there's been all sorts of crazy traffic backups too.
Oh, yeah. It's not a good situation. They got to figure something out.
I do think something will have to change soon because, yes, it's only been open a short period, but I feel like this just seems extreme.
Yeah.
So something's got to change pretty quickly.
Earlier this year, guests were able to begin purchasing interactive remote control spider bots that will be part of the new Spider-Man attraction coming to Avengers Campus when the parks reopen. Recently, one of these spider bots was spotted outside of the Web Slingers attraction building.
I thought this was interesting. Disney Food Blog actually had a little video of this guy, and he was like, he looked like he was stuck in a web on the like on like a light pole or something.
Yeah.
And he kind of looks like he, I don't know, does something because it was lighting up, and I'm assuming probably making noise of it. Maybe it was like freaking out or shorting out,
shooting webs,
and what, getting itself stuck even more. I don't know. I just thought it was funny that not only have the spider bots taken over on the inside of the new Web Slingers attraction, but apparently they're now overflowing out into the guests, you know, into like the walkways as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what this all comes down to. I read so this is sort of off topic, but there is you can go look it up online. I think it was GQ. Yes, it was GQ. They had an interview with Tom Holland because his new movie, I can't remember what it's called right now, but he plays like a soldier that has some abuse problems and stuff that's coming to Apple TV later this month. But they also interviewed Robert Downey Jr. And, okay, so tell me, is this not the perfect Tom Holland story? So he talked about getting the role of Spider-Man. And he came in and he you know, met, you know, the producer or something, the director or something. And then there was a guy there and he's like, oh, this is Robert Downey Jr. Like, he looked like what Robert Downey Jr. So he like, oh, so nice to meet you. I've seen your movies. I really respect you, blah, blah, blah. Guy's super nice. Minute later, actual Robert Downey Jr. comes in. It was his, like, stunt double. And, of course, like, Tom Holland thinks that that's really him. Because he was, in the story, it's funny because Tom Holland's telling him, he's kind of like, it looked different than him, but I thought, like, it's him. Like, it looks enough like him. And so, anyway, funny story. What got me to read it was there was the headline that this might be his last Spider-Man movie.
Oh.
And he was worried about that. What it is this is the last in his contract and they haven't signed a new contract with him. So, I'm very excited about this attraction though, cause, he's in the safety spiel. I really like him as Spider-Man. Of course the new movie title was just announced, this last couple weeks. So it's going to be really interesting. It's like the whole next thing, you know, of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So
yeah, a new set of Disneyland Resort exclusive Mickey ears have gone on sale. The ears are made of a black velvet material with a stitch Mickey in the center of course, the iconic Mickey's Fun Wheel. Disney California Adventure is also stitched on the side of the band. They can be purchased for $29.99 at the Five and Dime on Buena Vista Street. you know, talking about right anniversaries, I feel bad because poor. I was just saw Pixar Pier because poor DCA celebrated their 20th anniversary and they didn't get like a great full blown probably what would have been planned thing. But it is cool that they're kind of just slowly releasing this merch. So it's kind of like this is how we're celebrating is like
yeah
through merch.
You know, as terrible as it is for me to say this, I feel like this is pretty appropriate for DCA. Like DCA is just continues to have weird issues with their stuff. So the fact that their 20 years have coming on without much fanfare is just kind of like, yep, this seems fitting.
I do.
These are cute though.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what do you think of these? I do like that they don't have a bow, so they're unisex. Mm-hmm. So they could be Mickey or Minnie ears, but I just think they're fun. I also like that it's embroidered.
They look like they might be comfortable too.
Yeah, they look kind of cushiony. But I do. I like the embroidered look in that it's like some screen printed thing.
Yeah, I think embroidery is cool because it seems like fancier and like a higher quality thing when they're embroidered. The only thing I worry about is like if you get a snag or something that looks bad.
Yeah,
but you know, the same thing could happen with, you know, if you have like printed stuff, it could start to wear off. So there's plus and minuses to mm-hmm. everything. But I like the embroidery. Back in 2012, a group of folks got to visit and stay in the Disneyland Dream Suite above Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland. Over at Mice Chat, the story is told in wonderful detail with pictures.
So many pictures.
Including a write-up are some surprises, like being given a tour of the park after hours. Check out the link in our show notes for the complete story. I loved reading this.
It was like you were with them. The writers for this did such a great job retelling their experience. So many pictures. I learned so much about the Dream Suite that I did not know. So many little like fun hidden gems.
Did you watch the video? There's a video where she was like explaining all the stuff in the room.
I did not watch the video yet.
You should.
I was too like engrossed with all of the photos, but just gorgeous.
I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful space. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, they have a beautiful view of Fantasmic.
Yes, they got to watch Fantasmic from the balcony.
Can't imagine that you would get any better of a view. But they got to, and it was kind of silly because they dressed up in robes. But they got, look at this. They're walking around New Orleans mm-hmm. Square in the middle of the night. They got to hang out by the Haunted Mansion.
All over the place. They got to be on Main Street.
Yep. They got to be by the Mark Twain. They got to go sit in Walt's booth in the Golden Horseshoe. Oh, man. And then they have this great picture of them on Main Street. And as they were walking down Main Street, it was dark. And they got on the radio and somebody turned the lights on for Main Street. That is, I can't imagine a cooler experience. I'm so jealous.
Super cool. Definitely, definitely highly recommend everyone to go check that link out in our show notes.
Absolutely.
2021 is rolling right along and Easter is coming up faster than we all realize. Disney has everyone covered with some Easter treats that are already available. Marceline's Confectionery has cake pops, apples, and crispy treats, plus the handmade chocolate fudge Easter eggs that have returned. The eggs are usually crafted in the Candy Palace on Main Street, but this year they moved over and they are available at Trolley Treats. They run $9.99 each and come in vanilla, peanut butter, chocolate nut, and plain chocolate flavors.
So I forgot about these Easter eggs until I saw the picture, and I was like, oh, yes, I remember these now.
Yeah, so it's like, right, it's like spring's version of the candy canes. They are like this iconic treat that they make only once a year for the specific holiday, and they're super popular. Maybe not as popular as the candy canes, because I don't know if anything can be as popular as the candy canes.
These look so good. The only thing that I don't like about them, and I know it's because they're handmade, but I don't like the like rough exterior of it.
You know, it's Disney, so that's intentional. There's no way that they couldn't have made that a very nice and smooth look. So I wonder what the reasoning is behind the texture of the egg itself. Because, I would have also assumed it to be nice and smooth.
I was also very surprised. So Disney Food Blog has the link to these like cake pops. Mm-hmm. And in the pictures, they look like they're pretty big. But then they kind of zoom out and they're really kind of tiny,
cake
actually.
Cake pops are really not that big. They're about as big as like an Eisenhower dollar coin.
Yeah.
Would be like the what I can. So, they're not.
These
they're
look
not
good, though. Mm-hmm. They look like good and juicy. And of course, they look like what? Little peeps?
Yeah, little chicks. The mini apple, I think, is adorable. It's purple with a pink bow. Mm-hmm. And it's got like green sugar on the bottom and then little pink lines and little like light blue. It's very, very spring, very Eastery.
Yeah.
And then you've got the bunny Rice Krispie treat. The bunny butt Rice Krispie treat.
I like that the ears are little like bunny paws. Like paw prints,
right? No, it's
his
butt. So like that's the big thing in the middle is his tail. So that's his feet.
That's what I'm saying. It's like little paw print looking things. Anyway, I know what
you
said.
You said the ears. That's what got me confused.
But it looks like a Mickey.
It's a Mickey shape. I get you now. Now we're on the same page.
Yeah, yeah. The Walt Disney Company released their annual corporate social responsibility report recently, pointing out their efforts to operate with integrity and to make a positive impact in society. In response to COVID-19, they've raised nearly $2.8 million in donations for Feeding America,
amazing,
plus $615,000 for emergency assistance funds. Disney donated food and PPE, providing nearly $27 million in in-kind support. In addition, they've pledged to support Black communities, reducing emissions throughout the company, and much more. To read the release, please check out the link in the show notes. Now, this sounds like it'd be some long report that you can read, but they have a very good, like, little summary thing on their page. Highly recommend you go look at it.
You know, it was incredible to really, because I feel like we report on these things and so we talk about these things as they're happening, but to kind of see it all condensed and to see it in numbers and to see everything side by side by side is just incredible, the amount of things that they are doing for the communities that they're in and just like everything as a whole. I just think that's amazing, especially this year, because this past year, since obviously we've been all living in a very interesting time, and I think that this past year has been somehow even more important for people to think of their neighbors and to help each other as you can and to give back if and when you can, because we all need a little extra magic and a little extra help right now too. So it's just incredible.
Yeah, it's cool to see that they publish these things so you can go and see kind of what they're doing with it. And we, like Teresa said, we talk about these things and they announce these initiatives, and it's cool to see that there's, you know, like their data from these initiatives.
Now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James will try and stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to ask us 4 questions. We're going to try our best to answer them. And of course, James will give us the correct answers after the discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week?
I think I got some doozies for you. We're going to
par for the course. That seems to be our thing now.
But
making us think.
I'll give you a fair chance. Most of them are numbers based today, so you'll at least get ballpark.
Oh, ballpark. Okay.
So, as you know, Tag has a brick outside of the parks in the Esplanade, which I believe you still get a perk if you take a picture and visit it. How much did it cost to get one of those bricks?
Ooh, it was like $250.
I think it was like $110. It wasn't terrible, if I remember right. Just because James mentioned it, if you go to dealweekly.net, the page will load there. And off to the right-hand side of the screen, there is a link that says Find Tag's Brick. And there is a picture of kind of what it looks like and gives you the location and a nice, convenient little map. So if you do want to try to find it, you can. There's also a picture there of the actual brick. If you take a picture and email it to us with your address and contact information, we will try to send you out a little something for finding the brick and keeping it company.
It's awfully lonely with Tag out here in not California.
I've loved seeing pictures of people taking pictures with it and looking so happy. I feel like some people just hear us talk about it and don't realize there's a map and everything on our website, because people are like, it took us a while to find it, but we found it. So
I tell you what, though, even with that, with the map, it is still, because there's just so many to
there
look
are so
through,
many.
You know, so
yeah.
it's still a challenge to find with the map.
And I'm just glad they're still there, because the ones that were very similar in Walt Disney World, they actually have recently taken out.
Moving on, question number 2 comes from listener Donna S. How many attractions were open on the first day of Disneyland's opening? That was poorly written by producer James. Based on the official Disneyland Resort public relations fact sheet.
Ooh, I should know this. My gut's saying 13.
You're probably right with maybe like 13, but on opening day?
On opening day. And there's a lot of heavily disputed facts about this one.
Oh.
I want to say like 16 or 17, but I feel like that's wrong because I think that's later. I don't think that was opening day. So I think you might be right with 13. But I'm going to stick to my guns and I'm going to say 17.
Question number 3, sort of a follow-up. How many of those attractions are still open today?
Ooh.
A lot of them. No. Well, now are you talking, so like we talk about like Peter Pan's flight was there. So does that count because they've like re-renovated and all that stuff?
Yes.
Okay. So
we got the Jungle Cruise.
Oh, we're going to list them?
We could go through. We've got the Jungle Cruise.
I was starting in Fantasyland, so let me re-get my brain.
We've got Mark Twain.
Treehouse was not there. Mark Twain, yep.
Did they have the canoes opening? Probably not opening day. I feel like the canoes were later.
Mm-hmm. Was the Columbia there opening day?
No, Columbia was like later.
And then so over in Fantasyland we had Dumbo.
The
Storybook Land canal boats.
Yep.
Carousel, Snow White, Peter Pan, Toad, teacups.
Up to nine.
And then like Tomorrowland, almost Autopia. We had Autopia.
That's like it for Autopia because like nothing else. Yeah.
And then
does stuff on Main Street count, James?
We'll say Main Street vehicles.
Yes. Stuff on Main Street counts.
A couple of different Main Street vehicles. I don't remember which.
The omnibus, the first
train.
Day.
How did we forget?
Oh, the train. The train. So what are we up to? 11? So the fire.
Engine
thing that Walt drove. Mm-hmm. Not the fire.
The castle
engine,
wasn't technically an attraction yet.
So what are we up to? 11?
Yeah, something like.
The horse-drawn streetcar. So 12. 12.
Let's stick with 12.
Okay, that's the 12, I guess.
All right, and our last question from listener OMD. In Fantasyland, there used to be a Captain Hook pirate ship restaurant. What attraction is currently in its place? And for a bonus, where else can a similar restaurant be found?
Disneyland Paris, or a similar restaurant?
Yep.
So like in Disneyland?
No.
Oh, okay.
Disneyland Paris has the boat kind of like that, but I don't think it's a restaurant. So maybe Shanghai?
There's also a boat in Disney Springs that's a restaurant. It's like a paddle boat thing.
Yeah, but it's not a pirate ship, yeah. I think is what we're going for. And then what was the other part of it? I'm sorry.
The initial question was what attraction replaced the pirate ship?
Replaced it?
Well, nothing replaced
what
it.
What is currently in its place?
Yeah. Dumbo got moved and shifted back. And I guess you could technically say part of Casey Jr.
Maybe.
Since you could
find Dumbo.
Four good questions. They're definitely thinking. How'd you do this week? Find out the answers after this week's discussion topic.
Well, Weekly Tears, we have a special guest with us this week. We have author and creator of the Hidden Mickey Adventure series, the author of the In the Shadows of the Matterhorn, and former Disneyland cast member Dave Smith.
Not
welcome.
That Dave Smith.
Yes, not that Dave Smith. But yes, welcome, Dave. We're so excited to talk with you today.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much. I'm glad to be here, and it's always a pleasure to talk about historical Disney as well as current Disney and my enjoyable years working there.
Well, what listeners don't know is we're talking a little bit before the interview, and we've already got a lot of good stuff. So
yes.
I cannot wait for what the rest of this interview is going to bring.
As we always do, we would like to start by getting to know you a little bit. So, Dave, tell us, what is your Disney story? How did you kind of fall in love with either the parks, the company? What's your connection to it?
Well, the reason I wrote In the Shadow of the Matterhorn was I grew up literally a mile from Disneyland. On the border of Garden Grove and Anaheim. And as a teenager, we would ride our bikes down to the Disneyland Hotel. And eventually we learned how to sneak into Disneyland. And as we got a little older, we'd go in on Friday and Saturday nights and go dancing to Papa Do Run Run or whoever happened to be playing rock music at that time. And it was just a blast. And obviously we sort of took it for granted. Because it was in our backyard, we'd go down to the hotel and play frisbee and just hang out. It was fun. You always met people. And eventually, about in 78, I went down and applied for a job. And I was in my second year of college and got hired. I can remember my interview to this day. It was so fun because they asked a question. They said something like, "Do you like working with people?" I said, "Well, I'm a college tennis player and we got to be a little cocky." And they're like, "Okay." And so they said, "How would you like to work the canoe ride?" And ironically, if you read the first, my book about my growing up and when we played Ditch'em on Tom Sawyer Island, you know, hide and seek.
Oh, okay. I was like, what is
Ditch'em? And I'll never forget this. To this day, I was probably 12 or 13. we were done. My three friends and I were done playing. We were sitting on the dock of right. There were a couple of little docks on the island and we were drinking lemonade and a canoe comes by and the canoe operator threw his paddle over his head, spun it like a samurai sword and hit the water. And it made a perfect splash 25 feet right at our toes, right at where we were sitting. And I even opened up Hidden Mickey 5, which is the last of the Hidden Mickey books, with these two, the three boys, sort of similar to my childhood, sitting there. And the one guy goes, "Hey, Jim, what do you think of that?" He goes, "Someday that'll be me." And sure enough, as fate would have it, I ended up being a canoe ride operator, which was truly magical.
So I have to know, did you ever master the samurai sword trick?
Oh yes. First thing you had to practice because if you threw it over your head, you lost it. It would just go flying. And you always had to have a backup paddle because you're the rear steerer of the canoe. And if you can't steer, you're not going anywhere.
Right.
So, yeah, it took a little practice to make it spin in your hand, hold it loose enough, but not having those flying out of your hand and be floating in the river. So I did learn that, and you got a good workout. I mean, the canoe ride was really, truly a great aerobic upper body workout. Back then, there were only guys working. Now we've got ladies working as well, but it was truly a blast because we had no real spiel. We had no track. You know, people always say, "Is this on a track?" We'd go, "Oh, well, stick your head underwater and look." You know? Of course, we're not on track. Only the ducks are on the track. And so, don't they look real? They were real, of course. But no, it was really fun because you could have a lot of flexibility and have fun with the guests and get a workout and just have a great camaraderie with the guys you were working with. So, a lot of fun.
I was going to say, you know, you get a great workout. You don't need a gym membership and you get a nice tan out of it too, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, we roll our sleeves up really far and try to, you know, not have the farmer's tan going, but yeah.
That still happens to this day. I see you guys doing it all the time. So when you go to Disneyland on your first day of any given visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go straight through towards Fantasyland? Do you go to Tomorrowland? What's your kind of game plan on that first day?
It depends on who I'm with. Mm-hmm. If I'm taking somebody for the first time or somebody who hasn't been there in years, usually I'm going to probably take them down. Of course, I haven't been to Galaxy's Edge yet, so I need to go there. My daughter, my 22-year-old daughter, beat me there. I mean, she got to go, I think, a year and a half ago before the COVID thing hit. Mm-hmm. But I'm dying to see it. So obviously that would be, I'd probably go straight to the whichever direction takes you. I know it comes in from both sides. Yeah. So, but I've always loved Tomorrowland. I've always been a fan of Space Mountain. I've always been a fan of Star Tours. Of course, West Side Operations is so relaxed. I mean, the canoes, Pirates, Mansion, all those, when you work there, and even the setting, trees and greenery and water, the river, and Tom Sawyer Island, of course. So it really is a far more relaxing area than Tomorrowland, which is concrete and steel and whatever.
Yep.
So, you know, I really can't answer that question probably because it's based on who I'm with and if I want them to, if what's there, I'll ask them, what do you want to write first, you know, or do something. But if I'm taking, when my kids were little, of course, I wanted to see where I work.
Sure.
So I worked after canoes. I did work Pirates of the Caribbean, and I did work keelboats, of course. And then later, I rehired in for 1 year and drove the monorail.
We're definitely going to talk about the monorail, but we'll get there in due time.
So, what is your favorite attraction if you had to pick one? It does have to be a Disney attraction, obviously, but it does not have to be from, you know, one in Disneyland. It could be from any of the Disney parks.
Well, because I haven't yet gone to Galaxy's Edge because those look so cool. The high-def videos on YouTube are pretty dang cool. I can't wait to see those. But Star Tours, probably because I love the pre-show.
Yeah.
I love the format of the ride. I love the thrilling aspect. Plus, now they've changed it a little bit since the first few years. And Space Mountain will always be probably my all-time favorite attraction. Just, I mean, I know the turns, like, you know, I can sit there with my eyes closed. Right turn, right turn, right turn, down. So those are some of my favorites, I guess I would have to label.
Teresa, you're going to have to ride with him at some point, because you never know which way you're going on Space Mountain, right?
No, but Space Mountain in Disneyland I'm okay with. I was freaking out when we were in Disney World this past fall, because I'm like, well, I don't understand what's happening, because your body just kind of like knows where to go and it's not the same there. So it was very odd having my body like, okay, we're going to turn not left. Okay, got it. We're going right.
Yeah, well, there's two tracks, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're sort of the Matterhorn of their initial big ride. So
we're gonna have a lot to talk about this, I'm sure. So when you got hired and you first did the canoes, so is that something that you wanted to do? How did you get picked, or how did they say that canoes were your thing?
You know, I was hired so late. I was hired in June, and I was really fearful that I would get something I wasn't excited about. I was excited to get a job there if I could, but I don't know if it was my personality, because I was very outgoing. I was very athletic. I was playing tennis for Cal State Fullerton at the time. And so, you know, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but just the fact that I got on what we would probably call the rock star ride of the park for anyone working in the park, because it just had an aura of coolness, I guess you could say. We didn't wear polyester. We had leather looking pants and a cool lightweight shirt and a coonskin cap. And, you know, it was definitely, I got very lucky, and I thank my lucky stars that I was hired there on that attraction.
So what were some of the pros and cons of working that attraction? Because I always feel like the few times I've done the canoes, I get to be on a canoe that nobody understands that. No, you have to make it go.
Or
you need to paddle. You don't get just to sit here.
My favorite thing is the person in front of me always seems to somehow get most of the river water in my lap.
Right. Well, part of our spiel would be, you know, put your left inside hand on the cup of the paddle, put your lower hand on, or reach forward, pull the water back with your bottom hand, try to keep the water in the river and not in the person behind you's lap, because as you well know,
it doesn't work.
We are not on a track. And the most fun thing that we would do, because the Mark Twain, of course, would be coming around the bend as we were launching a canoe oftentimes. And it was, we'd launch the canoe, and the guy in the front would be like, okay, everybody, hold your paddle over your head, flat end over the water, not over your partner's face. Put your left hand over the end, and they say, pull the water back. And they take a few strokes, and we'd say, if you want a little incentive, look over your shoulder. And the Mark Twain would be right there. And it's so slow. The two guys working the ride could easily paddle it fast enough that we could go. But the look on the people's faces, like, oh my God, we're going to get ran over by this huge paddle wheel boat. And so it was really funny to see them, you know, initially, you know, and then paddle. But the cons is you'd get a paddle of a bunch of little kids, and they just drag their paddle, and, you know, it would just slow us down, and we'd have to work even harder. But for the most part, you know, it was fun. Yeah, there's not too many cons.
I was surprised because I had not ridden. I have only ridden the canoes twice in my entire life. One time was, oh God, 15 years ago now. The last time was when we were there for D23 last August, or August before last. And I was very surprised because producer Vern, our exchange student, and myself got on, and we were on a decent boat with people, apparently, because we kind of got into a rhythm, and it was going real good, and we were going pretty fast. And before I knew it, we were like all the way around the island. I was like, this, like, last time I was on it took like 25, 30 minutes. We were on it, like, it felt like 5 minutes, and we were like done. And I was like, well, that's not a lot of fun. I kind of wanted to like hang out here more.
Well, I mean, it is the only ride where you have to work.
Yeah.
Right.
To make it work. And so people, you know, I think they're they're under this impression. They're just going to sit there and take pictures or whatever. And, you know, it's definitely a different kind of ride, kind of throwback to the old days of the Indian Village back in the 60s and whatnot. But yeah. Still a lot of fun. But we get them going, like, for the canoe races. We're flying. And it's pretty, you know, you really practice to get that timing and the switches, because it's probably the hardest 4 minutes of your life. I don't know if you know, if talked to anybody who's been in the canoe races.
No.
But
no, and the most exciting was that someone got to watch the canoe races once. They got hired on after teams had already been picked, and they were really bummed. But yeah, that's as close as we've gotten.
Well, they are a lot of fun, and they create a very fun, because you come into the park at about 5 a.m, and the park is so magical when no one is there, because by 5 a.m. most of the cleaning, everything is gone. They do that when they bring the big lights up and they do the steam cleaning every day and all that kind of stuff. So you walk down Main Street and you could be almost anywhere in the park and you would hear the Sleeping Beauty or the Snow White Wishing Well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We've heard that.
The singing of that, because it's so quiet in the park. You can hear it anywhere almost in the park when it's deathly quiet. And you also have that eeriness of Walt's presence.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you see the light on in his apartment above Main Street above the city hall or above the fire station.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people kind of feel like they sense that presence of Walt, and it's cool. It's you don't get that any other way.
Yeah.
So that was very fun to be able to go through the park and walk through the canoe dock and just experience Disneyland in a whole way that very few people get to.
That's crazy. So when you were a part of this, how did you get to be a part of the team? Did you guys get like practice time, or how did like the prep work before the big day?
Well, the big day is a culmination of about 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
I was a canoe operator, and all the canoe ride operators, we would train cast members who were going to be steers for their team. So basically you had a captain of every team. They'd pick people, get their phone numbers, because you're always calling them, get down here, you're overslept, you know, 5 a.m. And so you get your team out there, and then usually you get a slot, like a 15-minute slot twice a week, if I remember, for 2 weeks. And you come down with your team and you practice. Prior to that, we did a steering clinic for 1 or 2 days. And all of us canoe operators would teach people how to steer the canoe. And it's hilarious, because when a canoe's going fast, if you put the paddle in and pull it down just slightly, it turns on a dime. And if you turn the wrong way, you're not following the river. You're into the island, or you're into a dock or something. And so you really had to teach people teach them how to use the paddle as a rudder. Mm-hmm. And then you had qualifying. So you had 2 weeks of qualifying, and you basically, it was done on time, and you would race around. They'd have three officials with stopwatches. They would time your time, and then they'd post it. And the top 10 would go on to the next round, or top 12 or whatever. And then they'd go to the quarterfinals, which were the top 8. And then the next, the top 4 would go to the finals. The second 4 of the quarterfinals would go to the sprint races, which were held the day before the finals. Sprint races where they had two canoes start at the canoe dock and race to a finish line down by Pirates of Caribbean.
Oh, okay.
And it was a sprint, two, and it was like, you know, whoever came out ahead would win that heat. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they would advance, and then they'd go against two, and then you'd have a final of that. But the big day, and the one that was always televised, and ABC News would come down and film it, and you'd have those 4 top teams in the men's, women's, and mixed divisions. And all the times are basically erased, and you get 1 lap, and the top score wins. Now, in 79, I had a team I had formed of all rookie canoe ride operators.
Mm.
And I got the littlest guys I could, because the canoes are heavy.
Oh, yeah.
But they weigh about a ton and a half. Just
wow.
Empty. And so you got big guys in there who are strong. Who cares? The paddle is not that big. So
right.
It's not how strong you are, it's how fast you can go. And so the lifeguard team from the hotel had won like every year. The name of their team was Engulf and Devour. And my team of all these rookies was called Bad News Canoes.
Cute.
Nice name.
So we were the number one seeded team going to the final. So we were the last team to go out. So we were ahead of Engulf and Devour by about a second, maybe 2 seconds. So we're talking a very, very small margin of error room. So so Entertainment had a team, and Engulf and Devour, they both went out and they had a time of 4:11.8. So 0.8 of a second after 4 minutes, 4:11 seconds. Mm-hmm, 0.8. Mm-hmm. And they were tied. And everybody's like, we've never had a tie before. And we, you know, we were kind of quietly going out on the river, getting ready to do our final lap. Mm-hmm. And the gun goes off, we come around, and they have this big display clock on the island. And it's showing you, it's not the official time, but it's pretty dang close.
Sure.
So we come across the finish line, and our time said 4:11, and it didn't have the tenths.
Yeah.
So we're sitting in the canoe, just we're exhausted, of course. And the official, and then they all compare their stopwatches, and they figure out the official time, and they go over the loudspeaker, official time for Bad News Canoes, 4:11 and 0.4. So we won by 0.4 wow. of a second.
Dang.
And to take the title away from them.
Yeah.
And so that was, I have to say, one of the most exciting days. And then 4 years later, my last day working in the park, I planned my last day to fall on the day of the finals of canoe racing.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And it was so great because my dad, who passed away the next year, got to come see my mom, my sister were all there. And they had never seen this before. So it was really a neat thing. And we ended up winning by maybe a second and a half, which seems not like much, but it was.
Right.
As you can tell. And so I know people can't see the picture I posted, but this is the guys celebrating when they announced our victory. And you know, it was a nice way to go out on my last day working.
Yeah. How
That's
awesome.
Awesome. So side note, David, we do put together like show notes. So any of these pictures that you reference, we can include probably in our show notes, and then people can go hop and look at them. So that's okay.
Yeah,
you can reference the pictures as much as you want. That's fine.
Yeah, because last week's guest, I put some in the show notes because she had a bunch of good pictures, and I was like, well, I can't fit all these into an episode graphic, but I'll do that. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I will say one other thing that was very fun. We were all canoe race officials, too.
Oh.
And all of us, Disneyland would take us to a huge dinner down in Newport Beach to thank us for running the canoe races every year. And it was a very special thing. In fact, the group just... we're all such good friends. It was really a magical, every summer we look forward to this part of working at Disneyland.
Wow. So you were the champion for 2 years. How many times did you get to participate in the races, whether you were on a team or just part of the official?
I did it every year from 79 to 84. Wow. We were first in 79, second in 80, third in 80. In fact, the second year we lost by 0.4 seconds.
Oh, wow.
So we were close. Then the next year we were third, so we didn't do very well. And then we were first. And then when I quit the park, I came back the next year to work the monorail, and I formed one more team. And I think we were fourth. I think it was the same year my dad passed away. And I was, it was a sad period of time for me. So I still did it. It just didn't have quite the allure of prior 4 or 5 years. So, anyway. Sure.
So after you did the canoe races and worked on the canoes, so was it, you talked about the keelboats. So did you end up, was it something like you got cross-trained on, or were they like, okay, we're done with the canoes and you're moving over to the keelboats?
Yeah. Originally, I first was trained on Pirates of the Caribbean. So now you've got two attractions. So if they need you not for canoes, but you're available. You could work pirates.
Oh, sure.
And keelboats was the smallest, lowest capacity ride in the park. I mean, we could fit 37 people on the keelboat, and we had two keelboats, but usually we only ran one.
Oh.
Unless it was really busy, mm-hmm. and we'd have two going. And usually if we had two boats, we had four people working. If we had one boat, we had three people working. So you talk about an attraction that truly had a tiny number of cast members working. Yeah. And so we were very close. Obviously, you know, spending time with just two or three or four people was a unique attraction in and of itself.
Wow.
Do you want to kind of, for some listeners who may not know, do you kind of want to explain what the keelboats are?
That's a great point, because they're no longer in existence. It's a ride that has been discontinued. It's a double deck small boat. One was called the Gully Wumper and the other one was called the Bertha May. And they were boats that resembled the boats that were in the movie Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer. Mm-hmm. And it's the same boat that Davy Crockett used to race Mike Fink up and down the Ohio and Missouri River. And they were had this big long keel on the back. And that's what we actually steered with. And you had people that sat up on the top. It's sort of like, think of it like a double deck bus. Mm-hmm. You had people that sit up on the top and people that sat down in the cabins down below. And you had a microphone and you gave a spiel. You had a throttle. You had the keel that you kind of steered with your butt because
ran out of hands already. Yeah,
you did. And then we would run at dusk and you had this giant spotlight. You'd have a spotlight in one hand, spieling with your left hand, throttling with your foot, and steering with your rear.
I was going to say, was the spotlight in your teeth? How do we do this? Wow.
I can remember we'd always shine the light on things. You know, you shine on the Indian village or mm-hmm. something over top. So we would shine it over some bushes. Go look. Nothing.
Very much Jungle Cruise-y.
Yeah, the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, a little Jungle Cruise. Yeah.
I love it. So how long did it take for the keelboats to circumnavigate?
Just depend on how fast we wanted to go. Sure. And if we were stuck behind the Mark Twain or the Columbia, which are the two giant boats, mm-hmm. Which were very slow, you didn't want to get too close to them because the diesel engines created a heck of an odor of the noxious fumes coming off there. So we stayed way back. But if there was nobody in front of us, and the hard thing was you couldn't really see in front of you.
Oh,
because the boat was in front of you and you were steering from the back. So you always had to look around the front end to see if there was a canoe in front of you or anything else. And so, or a raft or, so they were really challenging, and it took about 3 or 4 days to train you on them. Because spieling, you had to think about the spiel and then all these other steering, throttling up, throttling down. But we had some boats where we would just full throttle it and just, we'd go around the island about 2.5, 3.5, 4 minutes. I mean, it was sort of like Space Mountain on the
river.
There
you go.
And your guests are like, I waited in line for 45 minutes for a 2.5 minute trip around the river.
You didn't realize it was a thrill ride.
Yeah, right. So you've kind of mentioned the spiel and you gave us a little sneak peek. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about the spiel and like the intro?
Well, the intro was a fun little saying that we sort of adopted over the years. Yeah. Do you want me to say it?
Yes. Sure.
Okay. Well, I can still remember it. It's been about 40 years, which is scary because I'm getting up there in age. But when you took off, you'd say something like, hey, we're off, like a thundering herd of escargot being chased by a box of Snarl or something stupid. And so we'd say, so I'd like to take this time to say howdy, howdy, hi to all you pioneers and buccaneers and engineers, souvenirs, chandlers, cashiers, boutonnieres, frontiers, racketeers, brigadiers, mountaineers, musketeers, mousecadets, mousecadets, and in-laws, outlaws, grandmas, grandpas, coleslaws, attorneys at law, big ones, little ones, engine fighters, wild horse riders, city slickers, finger lickers, cowpoke, cities, folk, snobbuster, feather dusters, and all you lovely, lovely ladies, and all you other ladies too. Welcome aboard the Mike Fink Keelboats. I'm your skipper, Dave Smith.
I cannot
I cannot get over
I don't
that.
Even think if that was written down in front of me, I could do that.
Yeah, so, right?
Nice work.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yay.
Imagine, now we have problems every week reading like news right, stories. Yeah. Can you imagine?
No. They would be like, you're fired.
Since there are all these modes of transportation around the island, so we've already talked about the canoes. Of course, we've talked about the Mark Twain, Columbia. What made the keelboats like and the Spiel, what was different about that?
Well, we had an SOP Spiel that nobody liked. I mean, it was dorky as heck. So very few, heck, if a supervisor came on the boat, we are scrambling to try to remember our SOP Spiel because nobody could ever remember it. It was so dorky. I think I said the SOP Spiel once. But you just kind of went around the island pointing stuff out and making jokes. I mean, it was like, oh, over there on the Hungry Bear restaurant. Yeah, you can always tell the people getting done eating. They're the ones hanging over the rail. I mean, stuff like, when you're coming up on Uncle Jed's cabin, the burning cabin on the backside of Tom Sawyer's Island, you can always hear it. They had a soundtrack of the fire. And before you came up to it, you could hear this crackling sound. And you say, you guys hear that? Anybody hear smoke? Oh, it looks like Uncle Jed's laying out in front of his new cabin. Looks like the Indians gave him a housewarming party, and he's wearing his new Arrow shirt. And, played along, had fun with it.
It was like you guys were like cousins to the Jungle Cruise skippers.
Yeah. Yeah. They probably had more to work with in terms of just outright outlandishly funny jokes. But we had our moments of comedy and people. In fact, that's how I met my co-author, Nancy Roderick. She met me on the keelboats and said, that was the funniest ride I've ever been on. And we started talking. We just sort of stayed in touch and hadn't seen. Ironically, when we wrote Hidden Mickey, we hadn't seen each other for about 25, 30 years almost.
Yeah.
And she contacted me and said, are you the same Dave Smith that worked at Disneyland? I said, yeah. And she goes, Nancy Temple, Roderick now, it was Temple then. And so we kind of kept in touch via email for a couple of years. And I came up with the idea of Hidden Mickey and said, hey, would you want to write this with your historical information about Disney? And we wrote all of Hidden Mickey 1 without having seen each other, literally.
Oh, wow.
Almost 30 years, probably. Yeah. And so it was kind of fun to write a book together without the influence, I guess you could say, of actually seeing the person. We didn't have Zoom. This was, I think we wrote the first one about 14 years ago or 13 years ago. So there wasn't really Zoom meetings or anything like that. We just called each other and said, okay, here's what I got. Here's what do you got? And then we read chapters to each other. And I brought in the inner workings of Disneyland because I worked there. And Nancy, of course, just knew the history. Like you guys, a lot of astute history of the park and of Walt Disney. So it made a good marriage of our two interests to create a very fun mystery treasure hunt storyline about Walt Disney leaving cryptic clues to something of great value.
Now,
away at the end.
you said that history like us. You obviously have not listened to our trivia segment because we have been doing fairly terrible at that, especially recently. So, but thank you for the kind words.
Of course, I've got to build up my host here.
Yeah, right.
So let's go back over to a little bit of dry land and let's talk about some of your time working on Pirates.
Oh, this is gonna be a good one too.
So
Pirates was a lot of fun, a lot different, way different.
Yeah. You didn't get to talk to hardly anyone there. You didn't get to say
get some
all sorts
sun.
Of spiels and all that.
It definitely had you had more time with the cast members that you worked with. But when you took tickets, now I worked there, I was trained on Pirates, I believe in 79 or 80. And that was the time they were going from ticket books with the e-ticket, D, A, B, C, D, E tickets to the unlimited passports.
Oh, sure.
Scary because the unlimited passports at that time were $12. Which included admission into the park.
Yeah, that's just nuts.
But we would get it, the e-tickets, and we'd tear them up at the tickets, at the turnstile, and they'd come in. And you'd get kind of bored, and we started learning how to tear the tickets to make them look like things at Disneyland, like the train or the Mark Twain. Or, it was really kind of, we got pretty good at it.
Those might be collector items now. People probably
have
those.
I know, I wish I would have kept them. Every so often, a really old ticket would come through the turnstile, and I, please don't tell this to the Disney Corp, I would keep those tickets in my pocket because I figured, oh, these will be collector issues somewhere. And they were phasing them out anyway, but there were a couple really old ones that would come through all the rides. I mean, the canoes were a D ticket, and I'd get some that had the Flying Saucer ride at Disney, at Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
And I, you know, those only lasted, what, a year and a half or 2 years there. So I framed those. I have those up either in my office here or at my mom's house. So, but Pirates was interesting because even the turnstile had some cool things. You had a microphone so you could talk to the crowd. Back then we didn't have the overpass, you know, the walkway over. So the queue was right in front of the building. It did go around to the side. But as they came into the front, we divided them up into four lines. Because there were four lines that would feed into the loading docks, two in each loading dock. There were two positions. And on the microphone, we'd say something funny like, there are four lines as you approach the entrance to Pirates of the Caribbean. Please keep your family all together in the same line or you will be separated for the rest of your life. Oh, Mike, honey, get over here. So, I mean, just stuff that was, you know, funny. And you had to be quick because how many in your party? Three. Row five. How many in your party? Well, it's two plus me and my mom. Well, that's four.
I still see that happen nowadays.
Let me count. One, two, three.
Well, and I'm guilty of it, too, because sometimes we have a group and like two or three people don't show up. And so like all day I'd been saying like six.
Right.
And now it's like, oh, crap, how many are there? Or somebody will like D23. Like we had people like join us. Yeah. And I'm like, OK, now my numbers are all off. So
well, I think my last year we started playing called Hit the Break. Now, if you think of Pirates of the Caribbean, there's two loading docks and the first boat that starts to come up will pass the first loading dock and go to the second. Mm-hmm. Well, people don't pay attention. They've gone on the ride. They forgot how many loading docks. So as the boats start coming in, the guy on the exit dock would lean into the first row of the boat as it's starting to pass, right, as it's coming up on the first loading dock to go to the second. And we just real quietly say, sir, could you step on the brake? Sir, could you? And they're just stomping on the ground trying to find this imaginary brake. And then, of course, it stops in the second. And they're like, oh, you got me.
You're going to give some poor guest a heart attack.
I mean, you had to sit there and go, oh, thank you, you found it. And they're thinking they're going to go around again.
Yeah, right, right. Oh, no, we have to wait another 20 minutes.
Yo ho, yo ho.
Okay, I have to ask some behind the scenes Pirates questions, stuff that I've always wanted to ask. So what is behind the scenes of Pirates like? So, like, I've heard that it's like, a maze.
It is. when you're trained on the ride, they train you where boat storage is, where you have to throw a switch, which is just past the big ship firing at the fort scene, the big open after the transit, what's called the transition tunnel. The ride is in two buildings, and the very dark tunnel after you pass the treasure scene. There's a dark tunnel. Now they have a thing of something from Pirates, the movie Pirates of the Caribbean on the mist. Mm-hmm. They have a projection on there. And then that takes you into that big open area where the ship is Captain Barbossa, whatever, is firing now at the fort. And that's the start of building two.
Oh.
And then right as you're coming to turn right into the burning city, there's a track that switches and goes into a place you can't really see very well. And you got to time it right. Otherwise, you end up switching it and the wrong boat. And we've actually had, I never did it, but I've actually had where one of the newbies switched it and they had a whole boat of people, because it's supposed to be an empty boat, whole boat of people going to this boat storage. And,
could you imagine?
Like, I know. And you have to walk.
You would be
out.
So happy.
I would be so happy. Oh, yeah,
it'd be like, you know, walking through Space Mountain with the lights on.
Yeah. I mean,
so cool. But yeah, I mean, to get around in there. Now, there is an underground tunnel with doors that open to different parts of the attraction.
Wow.
And Haunted Mansion has sort of the same thing. Where there's in these white quarters, you almost feel like you're in this science fiction, crystal clean, you know, hallway. And then you open this door and you're now in this dark part of the ride. And so there's you got to learn where you're at, because you can get, there's people that have gotten lost down there and take them 25 minutes just to figure out how to get out of there. Yeah. There's an ongoing joke that one of the pirates is actually a former cast member who never found his way out of there.
just gave up. I'm just going to stay here.
Yeah, I might as well just stay here and work. Lived on, on old popcorn.
Yeah, they've got rum down here. It's fine.
So is there a way from like the front building area, like where guests are, like where the control tower and stuff is? Is there a tunnel and stuff that connects both of the two buildings, or do you have to like go out and like go into the other building, or?
On the loading dock, there's a small door to the left as you're looking towards the loading dock as the boats are going forward. And that door goes to both a small break area, but then it takes you down. It really doesn't go underground, because technically when you go down the waterfalls, just like on Haunted Mansion, you go down the elevators that go down the expanding room or the stretching room, as they call it. You're actually going down to the what's now called Downtown Disney level, which was originally the parking lot. And so you're just going down, because as you walk through Disneyland, you're technically going slightly uphill.
Oh,
as you're reaching the West Side Ops, West Side and Pirates or New Orleans and Critter Country, or what was then called Bear Country. But so you're technically not really going underground. But there's technically one level below that ground level where the cast member cafeteria is called the or the deck, Disneyland employee cafeteria was called the DEC. We always called it the pit, not because of the food, but because back in the old days, they had all these race cars on the wall. And so the pit was like the pit stop. But it was always called the pit when I worked there, even though the race cars were all gone. And so that's down. The funniest thing is to get to there, if you're coming in from Haunted Mansion or that side of the park, you had to go through past the train station in New Orleans Square. And there's a men's restroom.
You
may have had to use the facilities. And if you go down that hallway along, there's like foliage and stuff. And then you go down and the men's restroom is on the left. And then there's a door to the right. This is cast members only. And that takes you to a stairway that takes you down to the pit or the DEC. Now, the funniest thing is we would be going on a break. Usually sometimes we'd be with one of the girls from Haunted Mansion or Bear Band, Country Bear Jamboree, or, you know, the rafts. And so we'd be walking with the girl. And it looks like we're going to the men's restroom. And so we would have a guest say, You're going to the men's restroom, and the girl would say, "Yeah, I know," and just keep walking.
I work here; it's okay.
And the jaw would drop, and we're like, "Wow, is this the happiest place on earth?" Anyway, it was very comical to see the reaction of these, because it looks like that's the only place to go is the men's restroom.
That's funny. Secret door. I like it.
All the secrets.
Well, Dave has had so many amazing stories and experiences and memories that he's been sharing with us. We actually had to extend it out and overflow it into next week's discussion topic. So please tune in next week for part two of our conversation with Dave.
Now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer James to get the answers to this week's trivia.
Hey, a pretty good week for you. You might not have nailed all the answers right, but like you showed your Disney knowledge.
Okay.
That's a good thing going for you.
Let's try. So,
our first question, as you know, Tag has a brick outside the parks, which you can get a perk for visiting and sending us a picture. How much did it cost to buy one of those? You're both in the right ballpark. $150.
$150.
So we just had to like your 100 plus my 50. Because I said 250.
Yeah.
Just had to meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Question number two came from listener Donna S. How many attractions were open on Disneyland's opening day based on the official Disneyland Resort public relations fact sheet? And it is 18.
Oh.
I did a lot of looking at websites to try to find these, and it is complicated because what counts as an attraction is complicated. Is it only ticketed attractions, shows, major sponsored exhibits? Like, there's a lot. So,
I didn't think about that.
No, yeah.
Like over in Tomorrowland. Yeah.
So the 18 on the fact sheet, which will help with the next question as well, were the Santa Fe and Disneyland Railroad passenger train at Main Street Station, the horse-drawn streetcars, the horse-drawn fire wagon, the horse-drawn Surreys, the Main Street Cinema, the Jungle Cruise, the Santa Fe and Disneyland Railroad freight train at Frontierland Station.
Oh, that's true, because didn't they have two different, they didn't stop at all the stations.
It was not a loop.
So you get on at Frontierland and you go around, and then when you would, it's still there at Disneyland where there's the train, there's a part of the track that goes out. They used to have that at each station where the train would just pass.
Oh. So they counted the train as two separate attractions.
Yeah, because there was only two stations, wasn't there?
Correct.
Yeah. That's interesting that it's two separate things.
Continuing in Frontierland, there was the Stagecoach. The Mule Pack, where you could ride mules.
Oh, you know, we skipped Frontierland altogether.
Yeah.
The Mark Twain Riverboat.
Oh, except for that.
King Arthur Carousel. Snow White's Adventures, or Snow White's Wish, I think it might have opened as. I don't remember that one. Peter Pan Flight. Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. The Mad Tea Party. The Canal Boats of the World, which we now know as Storybook Land Canal Boats. The Tomorrowland Autopia and the Monsanto Hall of Chemistry.
Okay.
Reference Dumbleland opened, or Dumbo opened about a month later.
Yeah.
Casey Jr. is complicated because there's some stories that say they opened on day one but closed for the next 2 weeks because of safety concerns.
Sure.
And then others that opened shortly after was Circarama USA, which opened the next day, and Rocket to the Moon, which opened about a week later.
Interesting.
And which ones are still there?
You got the number right, actually. You did not get the attractions right, but it is 12.
Yay! Way to accidentally stumble into the correct number.
So the four that are gone are the one of the train stations. They counted the Disneyland one.
Sure.
Or the Main Street one. The Fire Wagon, the Surreys, the Stagecoach, the Mule Pack, and the Hall of Chemistry.
Yep. Wow.
So, quite some changes for the other ones. But, hey, you got the number right. That's a big win for you two. And our final question in from listener OMD. In Fantasyland, there used to be a Captain Hook Pirate Ship restaurant. Which attraction is currently in its place? And for a bonus, where else can a similar restaurant be found? And Ohm pulled this from Yesterland in 1983. The Fantasyland refurb, the ship, water, and tables were removed and replaced by the Flying Elephant Dumbo. Well done on that one. And Tag, you should trust your gut instinct. Disneyland Paris has this restaurant in Adventureland.
There's actually a restaurant there.
According to Yesterland.
Okay.
Very cool.
Yeah, because maybe I was just thinking of the skull. Because I remember in Disneyland Paris, I walked around in the skull.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not the ship, so I don't know why I was thinking
You know,
that.
This is one thing that I wish I could get a time machine and go back and see. I don't know why, but like having a pirate ship restaurant in Skull Rock in Fantasyland just seems so cool to
That
me.
Was like some of the best theming there. I don't know why they took it out.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably just had to make room for things, but maybe if they ever expand Fantasyland again,
maybe.
That would be a cool thing to add.
To bring back, yeah.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love the idea of a pirate ship restaurant, right?
I like it.
Just like who doesn't love the idea of good trivia questions for TNT? God, that was a bad segue, but deal with me. You can send them my way, and producer Vern and I will happily ask them. Our email is trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic.
Also, good luck with getting your Touch of Disney park tickets.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.